My next guest is on the line. She's Nicole Lambert-Brockman. She's a British journalist, and she has written an opinion piece which was published in Newsweek. The title of the piece was the following: "As a British Jew, I already feel more afraid." What a stark comment that is about where we are and the kind of environment that exists in Britain today. So, Nicole, let's get to the bottom of this. Thank you so much for joining me on Chai FM.
That's okay. Thanks for having me on.
So, Nicole, that's a very strong statement that as a British Jew, you already feel more afraid. And I'm just wondering, when was the moment or maybe the accumulation of moments that made you realize that, hey, this fear thing now, it's part of my everyday life?
It is an accumulation. And I suppose that I write a lot about anti-Semitism, so I see it very starkly, and perhaps I see it worse than other people see it. But we see it from the top, we see it from the bottom, we're seeing it from the leadership in our country, we're seeing it inside our institutions, the point where some Jewish people are too afraid to have their Jewish on their medical records because there's anti-Semitic doctors. It's happening in universities and schools. It's happening in the school unions are really pushing anti-Zionist rhetoric. It's anti-Zionist rhetoric has become massive in the streets, in the universities, and it's harmful. And then, of course, we've had several terrorist attacks. We had one which ended up with two dead people being killed in Manchester on Yom Kippur. And then Golders Green, which is a kind of place I grew up really going to and from Golders Green tube station. We've had stabbings there. We've had firebomb attacks. So it feels like there's a visceral fear of what's happening in the air, and then there's the actual the danger, which has led to the outgoing Prime Minister giving us £250 million as a community to build higher walls, basically.
So let's talk about the political change, because it's interesting to me. Andy Burnham, it seemed 3-4 weeks ago, before he was elected as leader of the Labour Party, there was some positive... it seemed as if the Jewish community has had a very positive feeling about him. That then changed with the first couple of statements that he made, and you've referred to it as a polite British coup, a symptom of a political system in turmoil. Maybe you want to just explain to us here in South Africa as to why the change, and how does this kind of current political instability feed into the anxiety that British Jews are feeling currently?
Yeah, well, of course, whenever there is any sort of instability in a country, that ramps up anti-Semitism, and we've seen that throughout history. We have really, since Brexit, seen a succession of prime ministers. You know, I remember when I was growing up, a prime minister going, and the first one I remember going was Margaret Thatcher. That was a huge story. And obviously, I'm a journalist, so I love the news. So I used to, I think, you know, when David Cameron resigned after the Brexit vote, I was like, come on, boys, this, you know, you don't really get to see a prime minister leaving office very often. Come and watch it. But then we have had this is our seventh prime minister in 10 years, which speaks to a great deal of uncertainty. So normally a new political leader is chosen from among the MPs and members of parliament in the House. It's really interesting. So Keir Starmer came in on a promise of changing the Labour Party, and in many ways he did. There'd obviously been a massive problem with anti-Semitism inside the party, and one of the things that he kind of was proud of and talked frequently of was clearing the party of anti-Semitism.
There was that
which
whole Corbyn
did to an extent
issue. Yeah.
The Corbynite, the Corbynite anti-Semitism. So he did, to an extent, he used anti-Semitism as a kind of factional weapon, I would say. In some ways, it was easier just to say, right, if you are a member of this group, for example, anti-Zionist against the witch hunt, then you are no longer a member of the Labour Party. And for me, it felt even then that although, yes, he was kind of clearing the party of anti-Semites, he wasn't explaining why what they said was anti-Semitic. So it kind of created more anger. And then, of course, we had October 7. So Keir Starmer, he He took power with a lot of seats in 2024, but without much love for him. And that has gone down and down in the country to the point where Labour MPs were being told on their doorstep, we hate Keir Starmer. And he was the most unpopular prime minister we've had in decades. So they decided to get rid of him. Instead of looking around to who the front runners were with inside the cabinet or with inside parliament, a kind of a cohort known as the soft left in the Labour Party picked on Andy Burnham, who's not been in the House of Commons for 10 years. He was the MP for Manchester. There's the second largest Jewish community in England is in Manchester, and they had a pretty good relationship with him. But there were kind of also worrying signs in terms of him calling for a ceasefire with the Israel-Gaza war after 20 days, which, you know, of course, look, we all want peace. We all would love the idea of a ceasefire, but no country after October 7 would immediately say, okay, we're going to stop fighting now. It has, and that to me has just shown the kind of lack of understanding of the actual Israel-Hamas situation that we see in our politics, and we certainly see with Andy Burnham. You know, it's kind of, and we see it quite a lot. Just the whole idea of, well, if everyone just sat down around a table, then surely we could make things up. You know, this idea of just diplomacy being all important, and of course, diplomacy is important, but it has to come with a threat of something else. So Andy Burnham has come in, and one of the first things he's done was kind of reiterate and apologise for the way that Labour behaved after October 7, which is when Starmer basically said Israel has a right to defend itself. And he didn't. He kind of went against his MPs who were demanding a ceasefire. But also we've had a situation here with the BBC, with the media, and the most anti-Semitic or someone that certainly traded in anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic tropes, who was the highest paid presenter on the BBC, Gary Lineker. He was a England footballer, and he hosted the Premiership League, the television show. And he ended up being fired from the BBC after a succession of errors. And the final one was sharing an Instagram of Zionists with a rat emoji, and even for the most oblivious person, that basically calling Jews rats is anti-Semitic. So he was fired. But one of the first things that Andy Burnham does, he doesn't go on mainstream television and have any sort of interview before he becomes our prime minister. But he goes on Gary Lineker's show, which feels like a real two fingers up to the 100%. Jewish community, which has been suffering so much.
This is incredible, because just 2 or 3 weeks before then, I remember reading in the Jewish press worldwide that he was talking about the fact that his first overseas trip would be to Israel. So I don't know. Those who happened to control the strings clearly made him change course. So unless that wasn't correct in the first place.
Yeah, well, I think he said that in 2015. So he said that a long time ago. He said that when being pro-Israel was kind of fashionable in Labour, and now it is deeply, deeply unfashionable to be pro-Israel. I'm amazed, but you know, there are some that are amazing allies to us in the Labour Party, but what we see now in the country is there's two kind of fringe parties that are becoming bigger and bigger. So there's Reform, which is further right to the Tories, who are the traditional kind of party of leadership. They're centre right. And then you've got the Greens. And so Andy Burnham has to decide whether he wants to go more towards the Greens. And the Greens want to, they already debated once but didn't have a chance to vote, and they're going to be debating again the motion that Zionism is racism, which obviously was kind of done by the UN in 1975 and then rescinded at the end of the Cold War. But they want to bring back these libels, and we're just seeing on our streets so much Zionist hate or hatred for Zionists, which of course, you know, then makes its way towards just Jewish people. And we've seen with the attacks that have happened, certainly in Manchester, this idea of, you know, this terrorist attacked them, was like, you're killing their babies, you're killing our babies, and it's just this baby killer libel, which of course started in the United Kingdom, in England, 800 years ago. and led eventually the expulsion of the Jews.
Yeah, we
so
conveniently forget
it
that.
Does feel concerning.
You've written before about the emotional climate for Jews in Britain since October the 7th. Has that climate shifted again with a sudden change in leadership?
I guess it's very early days, but yeah, it definitely feels in terms of Israel, it's much harder. They're getting harder and harder. They're talking a lot more about the settlements. And again, it seems to me that there's no nuance in the conversation, because what they are essentially saying that there should be no Jews at all in the West Bank and in the disputed territory. So that may become increasingly problematic. There's going to be, you know, and it just leads to more and more discussion about Israel. During time in the House of Commons, already Israel has been debated more than the National Health Service.
Oh my goodness.
It's an obsession.
That is an obsession.
And just the obsessiveness, the obsessiveness of it just means that we are constantly at the forefront and constantly on our guard. So even though there's been a ceasefire now in Gaza and with Israel since October, it's still debated all the time. And this lie of the genocide has continued. So I can only see it becoming worse. I don't know how much more dangerous it becomes, but what we're also seeing, of course, and this is happening across the world, so we're seeing it from our leaders. We're seeing it in the online sphere, both from the left and the right. We're seeing it in like the manosphere. You know, my eldest son is at university, and it's just the amount of conspiracy theories that he has to deal with amongst his friendship group. And these are clever youngsters, but they, you know, they believe what they see. And one of the problems is that there doesn't seem to be any place that you can take them to and say, look, this is the truth.
Because
there's hardly any of us.
It's on TikTok, so it must be right. Nicole, I'm running out of time. Final question for you on a personal level. How do you hold onto hope or resilience in a moment where the ground feels so unbelievably uncertain for British Jews?
I think it helps that we have probably, like Jews around the world, we found community with each other. Mm. So I've got a million more Jewish friends than I had before.
Interesting.
Last night I was at an event for Jewish journalists. So, you know, so we have each other, and I guess I'm holding on to our allies. I went to a Conservative Friends of Israel lunch there, and it was like, wow, so not everyone does hate us. And I guess the other thing is you just have to keep moving, step forward. You know, I've had the honor of interviewing many hostage families or people that lost people on October 7. And in many ways, what we're dealing with is very different to what people were dealing with in Israel, where they're under fire from missiles. Yeah,
100% agree.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
And just on a personal level, what gives me strength is I keep on thinking, you know, this is no different to anything our ancestors experienced throughout history. We're just lucky.
It's better,
we had a
really
50-year pass. So it's really no different. Yeah. This too shall pass. That's what.
Yeah, and we have a country to run to. We have
exactly.
to.
Exactly. You're giving me goosebumps. Nicole Lambert-Brockman, thank you so much for chatting to me on Chai FM.